Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
All right. We've always been preaching don't read too much into one preseason game. But we've been telling you all along, this offensive line is just terrible, and you saw it again against the Bengals on Thursday night. Or Sunday night, sorry.
Yeah, like, there's one... Deion Dawkins gets a pass because he was hurt, but for the rest of them, it was just dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. Josh Allen had... I really don't think you can evaluate Josh Allen whatsoever based from this game, because every single time he dropped back to throw, there was someone in his face pretty much immediately.
Yeah, and, you know, we thought this offensive line was suspect in pass protection when they had Richie Incognito and Eric Wood there. And now it's just even worse, and... You're exactly right, Nate. How can you evaluate a quarterback behind that? And I realize Richie Incognito and Eric Wood are better than Vlad Dacos and Russell Bodine or Ryan Groyd. But it was the same argument we made all along before we started this podcast with Tyrod Taylor. How can you evaluate a quarterback behind such poor offensive line play and pass protection? And it's just, I don't know if you can send the guy out there in week one behind that. Like, it was just awful.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I can't see McDermott going with anyone other than Peterman for week one. Peterman's kind of the he's kind of the punching bag, so to speak, because he's going to get beat up, and he's going to have to just get the ball, throw it real quick, which is what he likes to do anyway. And I think, at least from what the offensive line is right now, that's kind of where McDermott almost has to go at this point.
Yeah, and maybe a few weeks into the season... when they start to get some continuity along the offensive line, they might settle into a bit of a rhythm and not be as terrible. But, I mean, at this point, there's nothing much more they can do at this point in the preseason. I mean, maybe they can claim a guy on waivers when there's the final cut down to 53 from other teams, but I don't think you're going to find a starter that you're just going to insert into the lineup of an offensive line. I mean, we saw how bad they were when they were shuffling around personnel on the offensive line during that first half against the Bengals. And it's just, it was disgusting to watch.
Yeah, and I'm sure the Bills coaching staff saw exactly what everyone at home saw in that game, because you didn't really need to be any kind of a football expert to see what was going on there. And they're going to do something. Like you said, final cuts are, I think, Saturday at 4 p.m., correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's the final cut down to 53. So, okay, yeah. So, I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if the Bills do something at that point and go grab someone from some other team that got cut, because I don't really think you can do much worse than what happened in the first half on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you're not going to have any sort of passing offense behind a line like that. And, you know, we haven't really got to see the run game because LeSean McCoy hasn't played, nor should we expect him to, in the preseason. But you can't run the ball every play in the NFL, and you can't be such a run-heavy offense and expect to go places. You know, you can make the playoffs as a fringe team, but, I mean, it's a passing league now. You're going to have to be able to throw the ball, and they just have to be better.
Yeah, and I mean, we're really going to see, I think the first big test of the season is the home opener when they have to try to deal with Joey Bosa for an entire game. That could just be an absolute disaster for this team if the offensive line looks like that, or even anything remotely close to that when the regular season starts.
Yeah, and Geno Atkins is a very good player, and he just absolutely manhandled that interior line. And the problem is, in the NFL, there's a good player on every defensive line in the league. And Geno Atkins is not the best defensive tackle in the NFL. So it can get worse, and that's kind of scary.
Yeah, I mean, the tackles, I guess, at least against the Bengals, held up better than the interior line. So the tackles really got walked back more. They didn't let their guys, they didn't just straight whiff like the interior linemen were doing, but they got walked back quite a few times. Well, and the other thing too, outside of just the fact that they were giving up all this pressure, was the penalties. John Miller had 3 penalties by himself in the first half. Like, A, you're already getting your ass beat, and now you're going to give up that many penalties. It's just, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, and Jordan Mills normally serves as the punching bag for Nate and I on this podcast. He was probably the least terrible out of the 5, I would say. The 5 that started the game.
I would 100% agree with that. That's not to say he was good, but he was the least bad of all of them.
Sometimes it pays to be the least worst. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. Daboll's going to have about a week and a half now to try to scheme something against Baltimore to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands quick. We'll get into a bit of a discussion about what we think they're going to do at quarterback. You know, Nathan Peterman has done nothing to lose the job. I don't think he's done anything to really win it either, but I guess the same can be said for the other two as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think Peterman has done the most, right?
Yeah, that's probably fair, I would say.
Yeah, so Peterman, in my mind, has done the most to earn this job. So I think if it's a true quarterback competition and McDermott didn't go into this with a bias towards one of the three guys, Peterman's the guy we want.
And Peterman tends to be McDermott's guy anyways, so I'm sure he'll be happy to send him out there week one. It will be interesting to see how a team like the Ravens schemes for Peterman, knowing that he doesn't throw the ball to the outside part of the field very well, so they can cheat on those inside routes a lot, and it takes longer for those outside routes to develop, so they could be in a world of trouble if the offensive line is as bad as it was against the Bengals the other night. And Nate,
yeah, I mean, what? You know, one thing, though, they are a little bit lucky against the Ravens. The Ravens' probably best pass rusher is out. He just had surgery the other day. He's out for like 3 or 4 weeks from a hernia. So that helps immensely after what we just saw on Sunday.
Yeah, and LeSean McCoy will help a ton, too, if he's on the field. You know, he's not the best pass-blocking running back in the NFL, but he's good enough. And then just him being on the field, and, you know, I'm sure Daboll's going to have a lot of fun things to do with LeSean McCoy, splitting him out wide, using him as a receiver, a slot receiver. We've seen him do it with Marcus Murphy in the preseason, so I can only imagine what they have schemed up for McCoy that, you know, might help Nathan Peterman, I'm assuming, as the starter, you know, get through that first week, hopefully uninjured.
Yeah, I mean, that's the last thing the Bills need, is to have Peterman injured when McCarron already is not necessarily 100% healthy after that hit he took. Obviously, his collarbone wasn't broken, but it's still something happened that was bothered him. And having to choose between playing a not 100% healthy McCarron or just throwing Josh Allen in week 2 against the Chargers.
Yeah, so I heard, I listened to the Bills beat with Joe Viscalia and Matthew Fairburn, their latest episode, where Joe B, he also wrote about it and said it might be a good idea to send McCarron out there, you know, for the full game against the Bears on Thursday for the final preseason game. Basically, it's kind of an audition for other teams, like, hey, you want to trade and have a solid backup? Because if you're rolling with Nathan Peterman as your starter and Josh Allen as your backup, why do you need A.J. McCarron? It's a waste of a roster spot, quite frankly, and when you have a lot of troubled areas on your roster, including, you know, offensive line and defensive tackle.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I do have to wonder, though, if they would keep McCarron regardless in case either Peterman gets hurt or Peterman struggles terribly like he did against the Chargers last year and throws 5 picks or something, and they don't want to go to Allen right away. I think they want to prevent themselves from being forced to go to Allen before they want to.
Right. And I think that's a good point, Nate, because you want to go to Allen when he's ready and you want him to, not because you have to. So maybe it's a thing where you keep McCarron around until, say, the trade deadline, which I believe is week 8, so somewhere around the end of October. And maybe then someone, you know, some team has a quarterback injury and they're playoff relevant. They may want a guy like A.J. McCarron if they don't have a serviceable backup on their roster to keep them in the hunt.
Yeah, that's exactly my thought process behind that. And I have to imagine that that's something that the Bills coaches are thinking of. Pretty much every time I think of something, in my mind, I'm like, they got to have already thought of this.
Yeah, and that seems to be kind of the model a lot of teams are trying to follow. If you think you have, you know, a shot in the playoffs, not just to make the playoffs, but, you know, make a run in, for a Super Bowl, you have to have a serviceable backup that can win you the game with a good roster around that quarterback. And, you know, the Eagles showed that formula works, or at least it worked once last year with Nick Foles, because Foles is a serviceable backup. You know, he's proven he's not a reliable starter in the league, but if you put a championship caliber roster around him, then you can win a championship. So maybe there's a team out there like the Los Angeles Rams that have a really good roster, and if Goff got hurt or something, they don't really have a great backup, and that maybe McCarron could be a guy that would fill that void for them.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a possibility, especially some team of quarterback like gets hurt. I'm thinking of maybe the Cardinals. If, say, Bradford gets hurt and they don't want to go to Rosen, because I can't imagine, like, after watching Drew Stanton this preseason, I just can't. I don't see him being on that roster, but who knows? Maybe the Cardinals are trying to think of him as their McCarron. But there's gonna be some team out there that needs a quarterback behind their starter come to the trade deadline.
Isn't Mike Glennon on the Cardinals roster?
Maybe it was Glennon that I was watching last night.
Yeah, yeah.
Throw the ball. Yeah, that's. Yep, that's. I'm thinking of a whole different quarterback. I watched the Cardinals Cowboys game last night. I had a fantasy draft, and I was over at my buddy's house, and we were watching the Cardinals Cowboys game. But just watching some of those throws he was making, I couldn't really even. That guy got paid so much money.
I mean,
and he's terrible. He's just like, I just don't understand.
I think that's an excellent summary of Mike Glennon, that you confused him for Drew Stanton because they're the same player. You don't want him. Exactly. You don't want him on the field. Yes.
And it was just I was just laughing. And the Cardinals defense scored like 3 times in the first half, so the offense actually didn't have to do anything because the Cowboys just kept turning the ball over, which in and of itself was hilarious. I think they had 6 turnovers in the first half. It was like Peterman 2.0, their backup quarterback. Can't remember the guy's name. It was just a hilarious game to watch.
Preseason does provide some interesting entertainment. I don't know if you'd call it, but just watching guys that aren't going to make rosters try to play football is a treat, I guess you could say. Yeah.
And this was actually the starters for most teams when most of this happened, which made it even funnier. Like, the first possession, Cardinals punted, Cowboys had a rookie returner, drops the ball in the end zone, and the Cardinals recover for a touchdown. Next possession, first play, the Cowboys got whatever, I think his name was Cooper, throws a pass directly to Patrick Peterson, touchdown. Next drive, he fumbles, recovered by the Cardinals, they go to earth down and score. It was absolutely hilarious.
That brings horrible flashbacks of the Peterman Chargers game last year.
That's exactly what I was thinking of, and what we were all talking about when we were watching that game. Because most of us there were Bills fans, and we were just like, this isn't exactly like what happened last year, the first half of that Chargers game.
I have to say, it's much funnier when it's not the team you cheer for committing all the turnovers.
Yes, if I have to watch, I just pray that I don't have to watch a Bills game like that this year, where they just turn them all over 1,000 times. And I think week 2 against the Chargers is actually, if it's going to happen, I feel like that's where it's going to happen.
Yeah, that could be the Peterman revenge game, and it's a home opener, so that's an intriguing one.
That's one that I have to make sure I'm at, for sure.
Yeah, so I guess if there is one good takeaway from the preseason so far, it's the Bills haven't really turned the ball over much at all.
No, and I think that's something that McDermott has clearly preaches, to not turn the ball over and then take the ball away on defense is a pretty good formula for winning. And you saw that last year with the Bills. Like, that is why they won a ton of games last year. And I think he sees that as a similar formula for them winning games this year.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see if those turnovers, you know, stay at low levels for the offense, if the offensive line is that bad. I mean, we know what happens to quarterbacks when they're under pressure. I mean, we see Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, their QBRs drop to about what you would consider a serviceable backup when they're under pressure. So that QBR drops from whatever they normally are to below league average when they're pressured. So it's hard to have any sort of expectations for the quarterback of the Bills, whoever it happens to be, to play well.
Yeah, and that's exactly how I'm going into this season, with very little expectations for the offense in general. My expectations are that they aren't going to score any points, so if they do score points, I'll be pretty happy.
Yeah, so Nate, you did have a couple interesting stats from the game the other night that you found. You want to share those with the listeners of how bad the offensive line was, just in a quantified manner?
Yeah, so Buffalo Rumblings went through and they watched all those 16 snaps that Josh Allen had and timed how long he had before he had to throw the ball or that he was hit. And for 16 snaps, he averaged 2.1 seconds of successful protection, which he basically would get to the top of his drop or not even the top of his drop and have someone in his face every single snap. And most of the time, it seemed to be worse than that. Like, there were times where there was pressure in under 1.5 seconds.
Yeah, and that you cannot play well under that circumstance by any means. Maybe a play here and there, but I don't know. You're not going to be able to even have a quarterback drop back if they're that bad. They're going to have to run everything out of shotgun, and it's just going to be one read and make a throw or run for your life.
In the plays where he did have some time, he made some good plays. So there was a play where he got pressured just under 2 seconds, froze the defenders with a pump fake, and then found Kelvin Benjamin for a first down. And that's something that I liked from him. And then the one other time he even had a remote amount of time to throw with a clean pocket, he put the ball right in Kelvin Benjamin's chest and he just dropped it. So when he had the clean pocket those couple times, he made decent plays.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough for Allen when he gets in there. It's not a great receiving group. We know that. It was probably the worst in the league last year. The offensive line's probably going to be close to worst in the league. So, I mean, you have to temper expectations no matter who the quarterback is. And you just have to hope that they can sustain drives at certain points in the game. Otherwise, you know, we expect that defense to be decent, but you can't be that good when you're on the field constantly.
Yeah, and that's pretty much why, no matter who the quarterback is, you can't have that any kind of expectation, because there's just not the time to throw that any quarterback in the league needs, let alone a league average type quarterback or worse, which is pretty much what is on the Bills roster.
Yeah, so, and I mean, the defense did play better than they did against the Browns starters, I thought, at least against the run. You know, Vontae Davis got torched and ended up getting benched for Phillip Gaines. And if Phillip Gaines is taking your job as an outside corner, you're doing a really piss poor job.
Yeah, he was really disappointing. I thought Milano was actually disappointing again too. He gave up a really long catch and run to Joe Mixon, just got absolutely burned. He did have one nice pass breakup, but he just did not look like the Matt Milano we saw from most of last year.
Yeah, and Tremaine Edmonds did look better, I thought, all around. He did have some bright spots against Cleveland, but he looked more comfortable this week than he did the week before. And with a rookie playing middle linebacker, that's all you can ask, is that the guy gets better each week. I mean, I do think he's going to be one of the best middle linebackers in the league in a couple of years, but it's nice to see that improvement from week to week, even though it's just preseason.
Yeah, he looked so much better on Sunday. He actually should have had an interception. He jumped a curl route and he made a really good read and just couldn't come up with the ball. And he I'm so super impressed with his speed all around. When he finds a gap and sees where he needs to get to, he closes that gap so fast. And it's easy to see why he's going to be, in my mind, such a good player for such a long time in this league.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the athleticism and those physical traits. As soon as that mental part of his game catches up where he starts processing the game at NFL speed, my goodness, he's going to be just an absolute monster.
Yeah, and we have to remember that this kid is still 20 years old, so he's going to be in his third year, and he's going to be the same age as most of the rookies coming out. So he has so much room for growth over the next couple of years.
Yeah, and we had railed about how bad the offensive line and wide receivers were. The defensive line was better, at least in run defense, I would say. They clogged up those running lanes up the middle much better than they did against the Browns.
Yeah, and I have to expect the defense is going to be solid to start the year. I don't necessarily think they're going to be a top five unit. I think they have the potential to be a top five unit, but I think that they're at least going to be solid to start the season. You can't expect anything less than that from a Sean McDermott defense.
Yeah, we'll have to see once Trent Murphy gets healthy if they can start generating some sort of a consistent pass rush. And it hasn't been there yet. It's also tough to see in preseason. You don't know how hard guys are. Obviously, they're competitive. They're not out there slouching. But I feel like the intensity cranks up a bit more when the games actually count. So if they can generate some sort of pass rush, it makes it much easier on the secondary. And we saw how good the secondary was last year without the help of a pass rush for the most part.
Yeah, and the good news for the Bills is Kyle Williams and Trent Murphy both were going through some positional drills today, and they look like they should be on track to be able to play week one. And that getting those two guys back is just going to be huge for this defense.
Yeah, and hopefully the Bills training and coaching staff don't bring them back too soon, because it looks like that was sort of the problem with Murphy. You know, they brought him back from the groin injury a bit too early, and he re-injured it. So, I mean, it's not the end of the world if both of those guys can't play week one or even week two. It's important to have them going forwards. You know, we expect that first four or five games to be a rough patch for the Bills, but you know, if they can right the ship there in October, they might be able to sneak into the playoffs again if they can get on some sort of winning streak. So it's important to have those two guys healthy.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Alex. Them missing some of those games at the beginning of the season when most people, I would think, don't expect the Bills to win many games those first 4 or 5 weeks. Getting Murphy and Williams for those games might not even make a difference in terms of winning the game as much as they could make the difference in weeks 8, 9, 10, 11, and so on.
Yeah, I mean, the first four games, I don't think the Bills will be favored or even close in any of those. It might be, you know, a 3-point spread to Baltimore that first week, but after that, they're clearly the underdog against the Chargers, the Packers, and the Vikings.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, they're on the road in Baltimore. They're going to be underdogs for week one. I think the lines are actually out for week one. I'd be curious to see what they are actually.
Yeah, so I mean, we found that Vegas often has it nailed a lot better than we do. Last year when the Bills were playing well going into Cincinnati, and I believe Cincinnati was made a 3-point favorite at home. They were just awful, and the Bills were playing well. And everyone was saying, what is up with that line? That doesn't make sense. And I remember, I can't remember who said it, but when they said, when the line looks wrong, it's usually right. And, you know, the Bills ended up losing that game by a handful of points. But I mean, spreads are just spreads. We can't read into it too much. Did you find those for the first four games, Nate?
Yeah, so they only have them for week one right now, but the Bills are 3-point dogs in Baltimore, and the over-under for that game is 42.5, which it looks like the lowest for the entire week one. So, and the Bills, the Bills just aren't going to score a lot of points, so I can definitely understand that one.
Yeah, and you know, I said Baltimore would probably be a 3-point favorite. That's typically the toss-up week one matchup when Vegas and frankly, pretty much everyone doesn't know much yet about the teams. They just give the home team 3 points. So that's pretty much Vegas saying, that's a toss-up, give the home team a three-point advantage.
Yeah, which is kind of how I expect week one to go. I expect it to be a really, really low-scoring game, and some defense is going to make a play in the second half and win the game off of it. That's certainly how I see that game going.
You say the over-under was 43.5?
42.5.
Oh, give me the under in that.
Yeah, I mean, I think this game's going to be like 13-9 or something. I don't even know if I see it getting to 30, let alone 42.5.
Yeah, there's going to have to be some defensive scoring to get up to there. But let's go back to Vontae Davis and Phillip Gaines. That's a spot. It's kind of a sneaky need for the Bills. You know, we thought that the secondary was good last year, but we saw how bad it was when E.J. Gaines was out for 5 games total throughout the year. That could be a recurring problem if Vontae Davis just plays like trash like he did against the Bengals.
Yeah, I think corner was potentially a need even before he started playing poorly, but now I think it's certainly a need, and again, this is another position that I would not be surprised when the final cutdowns are made on Saturday, the Bills go out and sign a corner from somewhere that they think could potentially come in and compete for playing time with the cornerback group that the Bills have right now.
Right, and there's nothing that inspiring after Vontae Davis. And Phillip Gaines isn't really a starter. He's more of a depth guy. He can play slot a bit better than the outside. But, I mean, you have Trey White, obviously, should be an all-pro. Then Gaines and Davis, and then Taron Johnson. Basically, that's 4 corners guaranteed to make the roster. After that, it's kind of just wide open for the Bills. So you can definitely see a guy that gets cut down on a team with a bit more depth at corner that could easily make the 53-man roster just by them taking them off waivers.
Yeah, and I think the corner and offensive line are two positions where that's more true than for others. There's so many options out there where you can go and find a guy that you think can help you that some other team didn't think was good enough to make their roster.
Yeah, and we saw that with Connor McDermott last year when he was a casualty of the final cutdown for the Patriots, and the Bills claimed him, and he's kind of been sneaking around the 53. He was inactive a lot of the time or spent some time on the practice squad. He's started out having a really good camp and played poorly, so it looks like he's going to be a practice squad candidate again, but it can never hurt to throw a dart at waivers with guys like that. I mean, it's that or give a roster spot to Lafayette Pitts or Breon Borders, who we've seen. We know they're not good.
Yeah, and I think McDermott is certainly thinking about this stuff. And I don't know if he sees the same things we see with Pitts and Borders, where we just, if you, as fans and observers watching the game, that they just don't look that good. And if McDermott has the same analysis, I would not be surprised whatsoever. And I'd actually be more surprised if they didn't go get someone than if they don't.
Yeah, that's not necessarily something you have to expend assets to go get. I mean, you can live without having a lot of corner depth. I mean, they made the playoffs last year. It might have been kind of a fluke with what they had at corner behind there. But if they can add, I can see them adding guys on waivers at any offensive line position, defensive tackle and corner probably are the three position units I'd see them making some waiver claims.
Yeah, certainly, and those are the three positions that, as we've talked about all preseason, where the Bills really could use more depth than they have.
Yeah, so I guess we've done a pretty lengthy recap of the Bengals game. We highlighted most of the terrible spots, the few bright spots. So this last preseason game, Nate, that basically I don't expect to see any starter out there. It's going to be interesting what quarterback they decide to throw out there, if any of the three. Maybe they just sign a punching bag for that game against the Bears.
Yeah, I think the Bills are going to go with McCarron for the majority of the game on Thursday. And there's kind of two reasons behind this. First reason is they want to see what he has, and make sure that if they or see, you know, if he plays really well and they decide, okay, we can keep him, great. But the other reason is if he plays really well, maybe he becomes a bigger trade bait than he is currently. Now, I don't necessarily think they're going to trade him, but it's a potential reason for him to play the majority or all of the game.
Right, and you never know what's going to happen to another team. I mean, if the starting quarterback goes down, A.J. McCarron might be the best guy available via trade. I mean, you're not going to find anyone off the street except for Kaepernick, but I mean, we've seen how that's gone. But I agree. I think you have to put McCarron out there. He didn't really get a fair look because he was on his back most of that most of his series against the Browns. So, yeah, give him an extended look. If he impresses you, maybe you make him the backup. I mean, I don't think McCarron's going to go out there and win a starting job in a fourth preseason game that everyone's just trying to get through without getting hurt.
Exactly. And McCarron at this point is your most like expendable of the three quarterbacks, I think, that you have on your roster. So it makes sense to, you know, put him out there for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to put your franchise quarterback out there in a fourth, or your future franchise quarterback out there in a fourth preseason game in Allen. And if Peterman's your week one starter, you're not going to send him out there to get hurt in a preseason game and then kind of have your hands tied with what you got to do going into week one. I am interested to see what happens in some position battles. You know, this is the final audition before the cutdown. Corey Coleman hasn't really impressed me at all. I'm interested to see if he'll make the roster. You know, it's going to be intriguing to see with him, Streeter, Ray-Ray McCloud. After that, I think there's a decent separation. So what do you think is going to happen there, Nate?
At this point, I can't see Corey Coleman getting cut. I think the Bills, they realize he's a former second-round pick. And or is he a first-round
pick?
Former first-round pick. Excuse me. And they're going to give him a little bit of time on the team to show what he can do. I can't imagine they cut him. Yes, they only traded a seventh rounder for him, but they still traded something for him. So I just can't imagine he gets cut. So I think at this point, I think Ray-Ray McCloud is more likely to make the roster than not. I think he's shown enough of what he can do on special teams as well as catching the ball. They did just use a draft pick on him, and he's another guy. I think I would be surprised if he got cut.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have Calvin Benjamin, Jeremy Curley, Zay Jones, Andre Holmes, then probably Corey Coleman. If they keep a sixth wide receiver, I think it's Ray-Ray McCloud over Rod Streeter. I mean, at skill positions, you almost always go youth, especially for a depth spot like that. It's not like Rod Streeter's Anquan Boldin, where he provides like this great insight to your young wide receivers, and you know he can still get separation and be a possession wide receiver like he would have been if he didn't retire last year before the season started. But my point being, go with the younger guys there instead of the guy that's 30 years old and has been a journeyman his whole career.
And that's exactly my thought. It's better to have a young guy that you can develop. And maybe that you drafted him because you saw some potential in him, and so why not keep him if he's close to being the same player as someone else in terms of his ability to help your team?
Yeah, and then I think the only other spot on offense where there's a bit of, you know, some jockeying going on in the depth chart, especially at the bottom of that 53-man roster, is tight end. I mean, I could see them keeping four tight ends, and Nick O'Leary might not be one of them.
Yeah, Logan Thomas has shown a decent amount this preseason. Kroom has looked really, really good, and clearly Clay's making the team. O'Leary, while yes, O'Leary has made some catches, he made some plays, but mostly with the third team offense. And I think there's a very good chance that he does not make the roster. Because at this point, I think Kroom is on the team. So it's between O'Leary and Thomas. One of them is not going to make it.
Yeah, and I think Thomas is probably a lock just because they've kept him around for a couple years to develop him. And like you said, he's looked a lot better. And Kroom just looks like a freak athlete. I mean, being a wide receiver compared to tight end, it's worth the project. Like we said either last pod or the pod before, Nick O'Leary is just average. Like, you know what he is. The other guys at least provide some sort of development. You know what I mean? Like, there's some upside there, a higher ceiling than Nick O'Leary.
Yeah, I mean, Kroom is a converted wide receiver. Logan Thomas is a converted quarterback. They're two guys that are still learning the position, and they have so much more that they can learn beyond what O'Leary can, given that he's been a tight end for his entire college career.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see who gets sent out there in the fourth preseason game. I mean, if they're benched, you have a pretty good idea they're making the roster, because you're not going to put anyone out there in the fourth preseason game that you don't want them to get hurt. So I'm interested to see, you know, do they send out all three of those guys? Does Kari Lee get some run? Is he still in the roster discussion? You know, he's been solid. I mean, I don't know if better than Nick O'Leary. He's made a couple plays, but, you know, if I had to guess, it's probably a decision between Kari Lee and Nick O'Leary if you're keeping four tight ends.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think if you're going to keep four, Thomas is going to be one of your four. If you're going to keep three, then I could see O'Leary making it over Thomas in a scenario where you keep three. But yeah, like you said, I do agree though that Thomas is one of the four if you keep four.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if Kroom makes the roster. You can put him out there in some different sets just because he's so athletic. I mean, we saw that play the other night in the preseason game where he basically just caught a 2-yard flat route and took it to the house for a 20-yard touchdown.
Yeah, he showed what he can do, and I think Dable could do some really fun things with him this season, and I think because of his athletic ability, that's what gives him that edge to make the roster, I think, over a guy like O'Leary.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess we'll flip sides of the ball now and just talk other battles for roster spots, you know, to make that final 53. And even if some of these guys do make that final 53, that they could be cut for a guy that's claimed off of waivers from another team. So I'm interested to see what happens at defensive tackle, how many guys they choose to keep there. The biggest name to watch, I think, is Adolphus Washington.
Yeah, I think part of this is going to depend on how close they think Kyle Williams is going to be to ready when the season starts. Because if you think he's going to miss a game or two, you have to keep the extra guy at that position.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. I think you can find a player just as good as Adolphus Washington off waivers, probably. I mean, he's shown flashes here and there. His first, what is he, going into his fourth year into the league. And we just haven't seen it consistently. I mean, for every good play there's a whole tape full of him getting just completely blown off the ball, whether he's playing one tech or three tech. So I think his trade value has passed him by now. I don't even think you can get a 2027th out of him. So I think if the Bills decide it's time to move on, Washington's going to get cut, and it could even be for a guy they claim off of waivers. So he might make the roster initially and then get cut.
Yeah, and that's certainly something to watch. Like we said before, those three positions we really want to watch come waiver time are defensive line, especially the interior defensive line, corner, and basically the entire offensive line, probably. But I think outside of defensive line and corner, the Bills, and then the weak side linebacker as well with the Milano Humber. I think Humber now, given Milano's struggles, is more likely to make the roster than he may have been 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah, and Keenan Robinson retiring definitely helps Humber. I think Humber's locked in now just because he is a force on special teams, so I think that helps him make the roster. Julian Stanford is week to week with a nose injury, so I think he'll make the roster, but yeah, I think Humber's locked in now. I'm not so sure about Deion Lacy. Deion Lacy might be a lock as well with Keenan Robinson out of the picture.
Yeah, Robinson retiring does kind of throw a wrench in any in plans Bills may have had for cornerback or for linebacker. I mean, because I think Robinson was, with the way he had been playing, was a good shot to make the roster and maybe knock someone else off of it. And now the Bills have to keep the extra guy there, and that does give him the chance to make the team.
What does scare me a little bit with linebacker is you basically got three or four functional players on defense there. The rest are just special teams guys. They're not guys you want out there playing. I mean, your starters are going to be Milano, Edmonds, Lorenzo Alexander, but after that, you don't really want Ramon Humber, Julian Stanford, and Deion Lacey really playing defense for you. Those are special teams aces.
Yeah, and I mean, even with a guy like Alexander, that's not really, at this point in his career, a guy that is going to give you a ton on defense, but I'd much rather him than any of those special teams guys. You're right. If the Bills have to run more than one of them out there for any significant length of time, opposing teams are going to have an absolute field day.
Yeah, so I guess we'll move back to the secondary now. Obviously, we talked about the four corners that are a lock. Intrigued to see if Levi Wallace makes the roster over a guy like Breon Borders or Lafayette Pitts. The Bills have a lot of special teams guys on their roster, so some of them will be expendable, and it might tend to be the guys that provide no value at their actual position they're asked to play on the field for, not special teams.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Obviously, if a player can't give you anything on defense, and you wouldn't be putting him out there even like in a worst case scenario, you probably don't want to keep them just to run them on special teams, because it's just a waste of a roster spot to have a guy who can't help you in a pinch on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to watch what happens with corner. Again, those could be Borders, Pitts, Wallace. Wallace is a good practice squad candidate if he doesn't make the roster. It'll be intriguing to see if they make the roster and then if they survive the waiver period where the Bills could potentially pick up a corner that's better than them on the defensive side of the ball, and then they might get cut. Safety, I haven't heard a lot about Dean Marlowe since, you know, the middle of training camp when he was playing well. It's kind of gotten silent since then.
Yeah, and Raphael Bush has looked really good the last couple of games. He had a nice interception on Sunday, and he's made plays pretty much each of the last two games on defense, and it's kind of stood out. And Marlowe's kind of fallen off the radar. You're right, I haven't really seen his name anywhere since the first couple of weeks of training camp.
Yeah, so maybe that opens the door for Saran Neal, who hasn't really ever got off the third team defense all that much. I know he got a couple second team reps here and there. He's more of a developmental guy, but I mean, I can't see them keeping five safeties when you have Ray McLeod and Corey Coleman that could make the roster, so you have six wide receivers. It just makes more sense to me to keep those two guys than it would to keep a guy like Marlowe.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Like, same kind of deal we were talking about at the wide receiver position. You want to keep a younger guy with a lot of potential over a vet, kind of journeyman veteran player that you kind of know what they are at this point in their career.
Yeah, and I mean, if you do cut Dean Marlowe, you can find another Dean Marlowe if one of your starting safeties goes down and needs some depth there. I mean, it's not like Dean Marlowe is going to be definitively better than anyone you can get out there on waivers or some free agent a few weeks into the season if an injury happens. I mean, it's just, I don't know, I can't see a reason to keep him over a young, blossoming wide receiver.
Yeah, and I'm imagining that McDermott and Brandon Bean have a list of players that they know if these ABC guys get cut, we're going to get them, and he's better than this guy on our roster right now. And I'm sure they have that list out there, and we'll see when waiver time comes how many of those guys become actually available for them.
Yeah, I think the Bills made three waiver claims last year, if I remember right. I know Connor McDermott and Deion Lacey were two for sure. I feel like there's a third in there that I'm forgetting, but Bean's not afraid to hit that waiver wire.
No, and we like you said, we saw that last year. And yes, you're right. It was three. It was three waiver claims last year. So it was Connor McDermott, Kari Lee, and Deion Lacy.
I forgot about Kari Lee.
Yeah. So and then they three guys that they kept for the 53 originally got cut, and that's definitely going to happen this year as well. I can't see it not happening.
Yeah. So that brings us to one final, position battle, the one you've all been waiting for, punter. Is it going to be Colton Schmidt or John Ryan?
It has to be John Ryan at this point. Colton Schmidt punted the ball four times. First four times he punted the ball on Sunday, it was like 33, 37, 35, 35 yards. That's just not good enough. And he needs to go at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cutthroat business. If you're at a position like that where you only do one thing, you come out there to punt the ball, and if you don't do it well, that's it. Sorry. I mean, John Ryan's been a decent punter in this league, and he worked with Steven Hauschka for a long time in Seattle, so that makes sense for him to be the holder as well for field goals.
Yeah, I think the Bills realized that when they went and got him, and I just can't see Colton Schmidt making the team. It's got to be John Ryan as the punter in Buffalo week one.
All right, so you'll probably hear from us more on the Twitter feed over the next week or so, I'd say, Nate, with the final preseason game and then the final cut down to the 53. You'll probably see our thoughts there. I don't know if there will be anything really worth podcasting about with a fourth preseason game and a few waiver claims. We can hit those quick at the week one preview episode.
Yeah, so that we'll be back. We'll get a week one preview episode probably the Wednesday or Thursday leading up to week one. So that'll be the next time you hear from us in podcast form. But like Alex said, check the Twitter through the end of this week and into the weekend when the final 53 cut down and the waiver claims process starts.
Yeah, we've also discussed doing, a league-wide season preview. So we'll probably get a separate episode out for that so you don't have to listen to that. If you don't care for it, it won't be lumped in with your Bills stuff. So that brings us to an end of episode 21 of the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am your co-host, Alex Pallinger.
And I am Nate Schreiber.
Subscribe, download, give us 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts so others can give it a listen. It helps boost our ranking there. We like to see that those downloads are creeping up, so we appreciate you guys listening. We'll be a lot more active, especially in Twitter, as the season gets going during the games here. So make sure you check us out there at @Bills_Breakdown. Facebook @Bills_Breakdown. You can also check out the blog, BillsBreakdownPodcast.wordpress.com. And any feedback or suggestions, you can send to pretty much any of those places, as well as our email, BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.